You're listening to Modern Mystic Soul, a podcast dedicated to helping starseeds like you go from awakened to activated. My name is Therese Tucker. I'm an intuitive artist, psychic medium, teacher of intuition, and author of Confidence is Magic. And I'm sitting down to talk with you about the ascension process, the spiritual growth lessons I've learned, and how to move into a more aligned frequency so you can fully experience your destiny. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Modern Mystic Soul Podcast. I am your host, Therese Tucker, and I'm really excited because today I have with me Deanna Riddick. Now, Deanna is a psychic teacher, the author of Awakening the Psychic Self, and podcast host of the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. Deanna teaches people how to connect to their psychic gifts and open to the spiritual realms. She currently helps individuals connect to the divine feminine and the goddess realm. And I'm really excited because that is what we are going to be talking about today. Deanna, hello, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Therese. Thank you for having me. I'm really glad to be here and I'm excited to talk about this today.
Yay. Okay. Well, So first, before we get into the goddess realm, can you tell me more about your own journey into spirituality and how you discovered your psychic gifts?
Great question, lengthy answer, like probably trying to always figure out like the best way to make it quite succinct. But I would say, you know, similarly to many other, whether they're called intuitives or psychics, whatever title you take, I had, you know, something available when I was younger as a kid. I always had the ability to hear spirits, but I was very afraid, primarily because I did grow up in a very strong Christian household. And we were at church all the time. And we were always either in choir several days a week, plus the Bible study, plus Sunday school, plus revivals, plus I'm trying to think of all of the things that I did. Getting saved. I mean, it wasn't Pentecostal, but it was similar to a Pentecostal denomination. And I had very, you know, specific beliefs growing up in that. So what was really difficult was that I was hearing voices at night call my name every night. And it was quite frightening. So of course I aligned that experience with it being the devil, which is what you're taught in some denominations. And I was frightened every freaking night. And it was a horrible experience because I was like, what am I doing wrong? You know, why does the devil want me? And also as a child and teenager, you have to decide whether or not that's something you share publicly, like even to your family, to the church, because God forbid, you know, what the repercussions would be. So it's something that I kept very private, growing up. And it wasn't really until, I know this is a very long story, but to make it very short, it wasn't until my late 20s, early 30s, where I felt like I had to do something about it because it never stopped. You know, sometimes I would hear something call my name 5 to 10 times a night, and it was maddening. And I thought I was losing my mind. And I didn't really know what to do. I didn't know where to turn. And it's very difficult if you come from that type of background to make a huge shift or to allow yourself to question and have an open mind that something else could potentially be going on here. But I did take that leap of faith, and I'm very grateful all the time that I did that. And to sum it up a little bit quickly, I ended up meeting my spirit guide in the most insane way. And he was so excited. He was so excited. And I was so excited. I feel like we were both crying because I was 32. And finally, you know, and the floodgates opened and we had hours of conversation about everything I could question about reality and why I was hearing voices and all the fear and the dogma. It was just a lengthy exploration, but that's how it really got started, was me finally taking a leap of faith and believing that something else is really going on and that I'm not crazy. And no, maybe, you know, the devil doesn't want me, or potentially that doesn't even exist.
Wow. I mean, that's incredible, because not only is it, I mean, I can empathize with you deeply about, you know, hearing things or seeing things as a child, you know, and that just alone being intimidating or scary enough, but then to have a belief system on top of it that really sort of buffered you from your own natural gifts. I mean, wow, that is a really, it shows, you know, I would say strength of spirit in you to kind of overcome such a big obstacle like that. But how did you find the internal strength to do that? I mean, did you have an external support system? Were you able to share your gift with anyone? And if so, how is it received?
That's a really good question. I think the only external support system that I had was my sister. She, growing up, she would always see things. It's really funny. It's like I had the hearing and she had the sight. So,
okay.
You know, when we come together, it's perfect.
Yeah.
But she had that and she was very open-minded. So I did kind of lean on her, and I, you know, told her what I had been experiencing. Of course, I had the same fears. I mean, when you have a specific belief system for a very long period of time, and it's a fear-based belief system, it's really difficult to disconnect from that. But also the hefty guilt that is associated with that, it's crushing. And it's not something that you wipe away overnight. It just constantly rears its head. And it's not the best experience, because then you start second-guessing yourself. And I think that's a very common experience, especially if you come from this background. But I really did, I would say, lean more on my sister. And she was really receptive, because she had seen things as a kid, and she was also kind of scared to share with people as well. And I think having her as that support, it really helped me to study and explore and not feel like I was going to burn in hell, because that was always in my head. And there was a point at the beginning of the journey that I reached out to my stepsister, and she's very deeply Pentecostal. And I shared some experiences that I had, and I don't know why at that moment I did that, because, you know, she thought it was the devil, and it made me second guess. It made me feel guilty and all of that stuff. But it really just took really believing in something bigger than myself and trusting that, you know, and I should know this as an academic, don't believe everything that you're just told. Don't just believe it, because when you are in a lot of these churches, you're just told never to question anything. You just believe what we say. But as an academic, you're taught to question everything. And I think I also kind of leaned on that aspect of my life, is doing more of an internal, you know, dive into Christianity and really understanding that. So that helped me as well, I think.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you make such a good point. And, you know, for a lot of people, when they're introduced into a faith or a religion, it's done usually at a young age, right? It's what the family around you is raised with. And so it's so difficult, because on one hand, you don't really get to choose that. I mean, I believe we choose at the soul level, right? We're choosing our family, we're choosing our experience, because it's going to help us develop. But it is an interesting one, because, like you said, you're not asked to question it. You're not asked to, you know, like weigh your own life experience to what you're being asked to believe in and see if they match up or align to you. It's one of those things that for many people, they actually don't either go into questioning it, just because that's, you know, maybe it's part of their own belief system. Like, this is what makes me a good person, is doing, you know, maintaining the beliefs that I've been given. Or like you, once you are an adult and you are sort of free to question, then, you know, then the puzzle pieces sort of get rearranged and put together, and you can see, oh yeah, there's a big part of my life experience that needs to be sort of reinvestigated and looked into, because this whole time I've been walking around with something that I thought was bad that actually was, you know, quite beautiful. So I think that's, I mean, that is really profound. And I think that it's a, a pretty big shared experience here. Do you think that, and just kind of out of curiosity, do you think there's a reason that humanity has this sort of shared experience of sort of, I mean, I find that having a belief system, no matter what it is fundamental sort of to having a healthy life. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Let's start with that.
Yes. I mean, I do think having kind of, I don't know why this just came to me, maybe like a code of ethics to live by in a certain way is super helpful for you as a human. It's stabilizing. Yes. I do think that it can be really crucial for some people, but not everybody, I think, feels that way.
Yeah. And so then we've got sort of a shared human experience of, again, we're being told what to believe, and we're actually sometimes, and it's not in the case for every single person, but sometimes in the face of like what's right in front of you, like in your case, where there's clearly a deep connection to spirit or the non-physical and a gift that you were clearly meant to utilize. I think it's really amazing that you said, was it the age of 32 was really when you got to tap in, that it stayed active for you for 32 years, especially when you weren't really allowed, I guess, to tap into it. That's pretty impressive.
It is. It's also frightening because it sounds, you know, I realized after teaching for a while and talking to a number of people think I think they have this conception of what the experience is like when you hear spirit, but it can be a lot different than what they think. So even growing up with it, it sounded very frightening. I'm not going to lie. Like it's still like that when I'm in the bed at night, all of a sudden, every spirit under the sun wants to say hello. And it's not just like, oh, hey, you know, Dina, how are you doing? It's like, Dina. And it's very earthy, breathy, and every night I'm like, you got to be kidding me. It's a frightening experience, but you're correct. It never left. If anything, I feel like it got more intense over the years, and it was a lot to deal with. There were moments where I thought I was actually legitimately certifiable, or I needed to go get checked because it was all the time.
Yeah. And did now that you are fully able to embrace your gifts and celebrate it and share them with people, how is your family structure holding on, you know, holds that space for you now?
That's a great question. So I think there have been a lot of changes in my family. I would say that, God, of course, when there's some sort of illness or tragic event that happens in your family, it causes a lot of people to question their own reality. Mm-hmm. And I think that happened in my family. My mother got really ill, and that really changed a lot of the dynamics in my family. But I also, my mother's experience, like outer body experience, that she had, it really caused her to even question like how she was, you know, brought up, being, in the church. Like, her mother's a minister. So, you know, we were deeply ingrained in the church. So her questioning kind of led to my dad's questioning, and that kind of trickled down a little bit to us. And that happened again after a major tragic family event. So, I would say that my mother, who's my stepmother, and my father are very open-minded. I think my dad personally has had a lot of his own experiences, but you know, for a lot of the older generation, it was very, taboo to talk about anything, but, I would say for some of the people in my family, they definitely are very Pentecostal and not willing to listen. And they're still very close-minded about it. And then for a couple of other people, they're very open-minded about it and excited about there being something else beyond what they've been taught.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Okay. So that's pretty exciting. And do you notice, or have you noticed, that as we, you know, as you and I talked last week on your podcast, and you know, I went all about the ascension, have you noticed that as the energies are increasing, that people are shifting kind of naturally, like just something is sort of opening in them, maybe like the mind is opening a little bit as our consciousness collectively expands?
That's a good question. I I would like to say yes. I do think people, I do think there's been some sort of energetic shift that has impacted us in an internal way and has forced us to question our own reality and to question also what matters. Do I quite understand this energetic shift? To be perfectly honest, I don't know, because I still am in dialogue, with people affiliated even with my family who are holding on very tightly to the past or to what has been, so I think the stronger that this shift is, the stronger the shift is, the harder, the more difficult experiences people who are, I hate to use the word caught or stuck, but who want to maintain their religious beliefs, they're holding on super tightly and trying to force the world or a lot of other, I can only speak to the United States, a lot of people in the United States to adhere to, the old belief system. But I do believe, yes. And it's not only a belief, but my guide, one of the very first things he told me is that a shift is occurring. And this was years ago for me. And I was like, what? I had no idea at the time. I was so clueless. Right. But yes, something is happening. And when I asked, he was very evasive. And he pretty much just told me, like, it's time. It's been time for a while, but it's the time. And that's why we are here.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that resonates deeply.
Are you feeling stuck, overwhelmed, or unsure of your life's direction? It's time to break free from self-doubt and confusion. I'd like to invite you to join me in my Modern Mystic Mentoring Program, where you'll unlock the power of your intuition and transform your life. With over a decade of experience, I specialize in guiding you through my intuitive self-mastery method, helping you heal the past, embrace your inner wisdom, and create a future filled with confidence and purpose. Say goodbye to indecision and hello to self-trust. Join me on a journey of self-discovery and watch as your life transforms into a masterpiece of positivity and fulfillment. Ready to step into your true potential? Visit blithestarlight.com/mentoring and book your call with me today. Modern Mystic Mentoring, your path to intuitive self-mastery starts here.
So let's shift over to what got you interested in focusing on the divine feminine specifically and the goddess realm? What led you there?
So it was very unexpected to be forthcoming. I didn't ask for anything like that, nor was I really seeking it out consciously. I just, similar to many other people, I have a meditative practice and was starting to have very strange experiences, which is funny to even say that because every experience is kind of strange, but I was starting to have a strange experience and there were figures coming in and out and I thought they were female, but I wasn't sure. Again, it wasn't very clear, but then I started having recurring dreams and it was very clear what was happening at that point. To be honest, I started having dreams of certain goddesses, or stories that I was familiar with. And then, and that had been happening for a while, but I was very doubtful. I mean, just to be very honest here, I did not believe, I'm not going to lie. I didn't believe in any of that. I really didn't. And it's very funny because I always think I can stretch, the limits of my consciousness. And that has forced me to stretch more than I ever thought I could. But then it had been many months and I had a very profound dream out of the blue. I had COVID for the first time. And I was very, very sick. I had a horrible high fever. And I remember I crawled in the bed like, oh God, I don't know if I'm going to wake up. And I had a deep dream that I was in the Acropolis in Athens and it was totally reconstructed. And there were a number of people there in their white togas and long gowns and all of the fires were lit. And I was me, but I didn't look like me. I had very beautiful long red hair, this gown, and I was dancing, performing a dance in front of everybody. And when I finished, oh, and it was a full moon. I don't know why that was so clear in my dream, but this man comes towards me and he told me, if you dance again for her, she will come. And I was dancing in the Parthenon. So I danced again and then I woke up like, what on earth? And of course, it was for Athena. She was calling. And after that, I thought, okay, I need to do some deep investigation in terms of what is going on here. And that's what I did. And I started communicating with that realm, but I still had a lot of doubts and skepticisms because I think one of my personal fears is doing work that I think can become a trend and disingenuous. And I feel like there's a lot of that out there. So it took me quite some time. It took, you know, prayer. It took asking my guides. It took asking everybody under the, you know, every spirit under the sun, is this legit? What the heck is going on? So I just started communicating with them and they sincerely, they were, you know, at first it was interesting. It was unclear at the beginning, but when I started to really make a commitment and work with that realm, things started to open up and that's where I've been for a little while.
Okay. So I have to ask, cause I have some familiarity with goddesses. And I remember, I just happened across a book at the bookstore when I was like in my early 20s about connecting with the goddesses. And I'm like, I don't know why I need this, but it's a book I've like cherished for years now. And I definitely feel like there is a deep connection there. I've gotten to make contact personally with Isis, who seems to be like the one that I'm really connect with. But I would love to know, Athena, why do you think she's the one who came forward for you?
Well, she has said to me, and she's a very interesting goddess. I'll put that way. She's a no BS type of goddess.
Okay.
She's a very strong personality. But she said, I am similar in character, with her. And she wants to work with me to help empower women as a couple of other goddesses as well, because that's what's truly in my heart. And that's the type of work I really want to focus on. So she's there to help me more with strategizing.
That's beautiful. And what are her, what would you say are the essences that she really brings forward that helps support you doing that work?
I would like to say, I'm trying to think of the best attributes to assign to her. I think that she's yes, very strategic. She can see the entire chessboard and all the pieces and how to move them. So she has a holistic point of view, and that's really helpful for me. She's very clear to let me know when something is coming from my ego and when it's not. So she'll cut right through that. Like, let's get to the point. Here's, you know, here's reality. Here's what the opportunities are. But she's also, she's just very helpful with empowering and making you feel very confident in yourself. So it's a very self-assured type of energy. And that's what I feel like we need, especially in today's age.
Yeah, no, that's great. I love that. I love those qualities in her. So working with the divine feminine, why do you feel like it's important for individuals to utilize this energy? And I guess before you answer that, just for our listeners, how would you define the divine feminine?
That's a great question. I think when people hear that word, they automatically do affiliate it with goddess worship. And I would say it's not necessarily synonymous, but for some people it really can be, and maybe even for me in some ways. But I do think it's this cosmic energy or cosmic force that's available, that's a part of every single person. It's just the counterpart to the divine masculine, but it does include certain I would use the word attributes, I guess, that include compassion. Of course, there's the nurturing and the gentle naturedness, but there's more empowerment, sovereignty, confidence, balance, harmony, I would say. Of course, there's the creativity and the fertility as well, but then there's the intuition that's involved in the divine feminine, which is an energy that I feel has been suppressed for a very long period of time and not taken seriously either.
Yeah. So when I think of the divine feminine, I always think of the sun and the moon. It helps me sort of like, I see or visualize how the energy works. So I would see the sun, right, as the sacred masculine energy that's doing or giving or sending out, where I would visualize the moon. And these are obviously like not my symbols, they're the classic symbols, right. But the moon being the receiver or the receptive quality. So if we're looking at it from that point of view, why is it important for you that individuals connect with this receptive energy? Because we do have a lot of the masculine, right? We've got a lot of the doing, and that's pretty activated, but we are talking about bringing up or balancing it with the divine feminine. So why is it important that individuals connect with that energy?
I do think sometimes with the divine feminine, because it is classified as more of a receptive energy, I think it gets a bad rap as it being more passivity, right? And yes, we do associate the active principle within the masculine, but I do still see, from my point of view, there being an active principle within the feminine as well, but it's a very different type, or at least the intentionality, I think, is a little bit different. You know, in a traditional sense, and again, from my perspective, with the masculine, we do associate a lot of domination and control, you know, and those are a little bit more probably the wounded masculine. But I do see with the divine feminine that the intentionality is more about healing, and it's heart-centered and more compassionate. And that's the type of energy that I think needs to be more dominant, even though I know the overarching goal is for us to integrate them for wholeness. I think there needs to be a rebalancing, but that can only be done if we take a heart-centered approach to healing the world, to repair a lot of the issues that we have today, unfortunately. But I think it's very important for all people to at least try to embrace that side of themselves, even for just mindful healing for the heart, you know, for healing of the heart, because a lot of us act out of our wounds. And we, you know, we're very, very reactive in that sense. So we perpetuate a system that is angry and reactive, as opposed to being reflective and forgiving. So I think that's why it really needs to be center today.
Yeah. So tell me more about how we can take a heart-centered approach to healing. Can you share some examples of how we could move into that?
Well, I think, and I know this is probably very trite to say, but I do think a lot of work, inner work, is all about forgiving the past. And that's a very, very difficult thing to do. And I would never tell someone just to sit down and do that, because it could take you a lifetime to forgive a lot of things that have happened in your life. You know, trauma is very case specific. So I think it takes a lot of being compassionate with yourself and understanding that you are we're a spirit, but we're having a human experience, and that the point is to make mistakes and to learn from the mistakes. And I think even myself is a very difficult thing to do, because you can be very hard on yourself and not forgive yourself. And so you live a life where it's a painful experience. You know, it's not going to be a very joyful or always loving experience, but I think it is incorporating some form of introspection and some form of forgiveness work, whatever that looks like for you, and incorporating that into your way of life. And I don't think that we value that in this society. You know, again, as you kind of stated earlier, that we live in a very male-dominated society, or at least patriarchal society, that focuses on just doing, 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 but it's never really stopping to reflect and understand or undergo any type of therapeutic treatment to understand our own underlying, you know, traumas, if you will, and ways to improve. So I do think there are a number of ways, but I think the first thing is wanting to get healing, seeing that there are aspects of ourselves that do need to be brought to light for awareness.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. In fact, my team talks about that regularly, about how we want to, I mean, part of forgiveness is learning how to integrate those wounded parts back into ourselves, right? I mean, I always get that vision. They show me a mirror is like your, if your soul was in perfect condition, it would look like a flawless mirror. But our traumas and the events that we go through in this lifetime puts cracks in the mirror, and sometimes pieces fall out. And those are those soul fragments that, you know, sometimes we end up rejecting because we think it's safer to reject them, or the experience is too painful. And I agree with you. I feel like the first thing before we can maybe extend forgiveness outside of ourselves, it is to like forgive ourselves for where we fractured. Right. No matter what the event was, I totally understand why it happened. And I forgive myself for separating from me, and I reintegrate it back. Right. So I can start to feel that wholeness and that oneness again, because I feel like the oneness we're all seeking for, or the unity, I should say, that we're all seeking for in this world, it has to start from within. We have to become, as my team would say, a unified field within. Once you've unified all parts of yourself, it's so easy to move into that unified state with others. So I absolutely agree with what you're saying, that this is the way forward for us to really kind of heal on the individual level. But if we're going to heal as a society, as a global society, this is where it starts, right? Is this willingness to soften. And would you say the softening aspect relates to the divine feminine, or is actually like an aspect of the divine feminine?
I would say yes, it is, even though, again, that word in itself can have very negative connotations, because it has been equated with weakness in some sort of sense, right? But yes, I do think it is lowering our defenses, allowing ourselves, you know, to, yes, be gentle with ourselves and having compassion for the journey that we've had thus far. You know, we're all on it.
Yeah.
And it's that willingness to say, okay, I made a mistake. I didn't have the understanding. And I forgive that in me. I forgive what has happened. I forgive my reaction, but it's doing that over and over and over again all throughout life, because it really is the inability to do that. You know, that lack of forgiveness that hardens your heart over time.
Yeah. And I would even say that the ability to be soft or nurture, especially after going through whatever you've gone through, I would say that is strength. I think that's real strength, because,
yes,
you know, it's like you're saying, it's like you are in a way disarming yourself when you do that. Though I would say that there is this sort of energy of like, I am strong enough within myself that I can soften in this moment, right? I have the ability to be, it's my strength actually that gives me the ability to be soft and loving.
Yes, I totally agree with that. And I don't think that in today's world, at least right now, that we look at that as a form of strength, but it really is. And I think allowing yourself to go through whatever, you know, the healing process looks like for you is one of the strongest things that we could do. And one of the empowering things that we could do.
Do you want to join the next Spirit Circle? Spirit Circles are virtual gatherings I hold every new moon and full moon, where I'll take you deep into the cosmic codes to receive the messages on how to work in alignment with source energy. The first 60 minutes include energy attunements, journaling, masterminds, guided visualizations, and more. Each Spirit Circle includes a 30-minute psychic Q&A session with me to get answers from your guides and spirit team. Every session is recorded, and it's yours to keep to use again and again. If you want to join me for the upcoming Spirit Circle, please go to blithestarlight.com/spirit-circles. I hope to see you there.
So how does connecting with the goddess realm help you do that work? And can you give me some examples about how does it shift your mindset as you work with this goddess energy?
It's a very different type of relationship. So the relationship that you would have with your spirit guide, or with, let's say, the angelic realm, is very, very different. And I think I was very, not I think, I know, I really didn't have the knowledge at the beginning of what that looked like, what the commitment is required for something like that. Also, as I'm sure you're aware, each type of goddess embodies very different aspects of the divine feminine as well. They have their own specialties.
Yes.
you know, you can choose to work with one. It doesn't mean they're always going to say yes. And then certain ones choose you to bring certain things to your attention.
Okay.
So I would say for myself, at the outset, when I knew what was going on, I, of course, explored with other goddesses, but a couple of others stepped forward because what they wanted to help me with is what I really needed to focus on to stop avoiding, you know, because a lot of us do drop into avoidance in our lives. But I would say it is just working through some of the recurring patterns that you see in your life. And a lot of us really don't want to address that. But when you work with a particular goddess, you establish the type of relationship you're going to have with them. And then, you know, I usually, when they showed up, I would ask like, well, why are you here? You know, what do you want to work with me on? Because certain ones that have stepped forward, I've been very shocked and didn't expect it, but I've allowed myself to go through the journey nonetheless. And I would say one goddess, which is fine. I'll state her name. I'm like, I don't know if she's telling me to go ahead and do it. But one goddess that I work with, and I would say my primary goddess, is the goddess Hera in the Greek pantheon, which many people would probably be very shocked just because she has a really bad rap. And them.
I mean, all I know of her is that she is, you don't mess with her, right? Yeah. She's like a very strong female archetype, like a queen energy, right? That's kind of what I know about her. But tell me, I want to know more. Yeah. Tell me more about it.
Well, yes, that is, I would say, the dominant representation of her. You know, she's queen of the gods, she's wife of Zeus, and she, you know, her representation is that she is angry, she's jealous, she's full of vengeance. Those are pretty much all her stories, right? There's hardly any redeeming qualities about her in any of the mythology, unfortunately. So of course, when she stepped forward, I was like, oh, who? You know? And I would constantly question, why are you with me? And you know, she's a mother, she's a wife. I'm neither. I'm not nothing, none of those. So I was very much so doubtful, but it really was standing in my own right as an authority figure, which I hate to use that term, but she wanted to work with me more on leadership and feeling confident in leading people.
I love it.
It's
yeah.
Something that, you know, I don't like to always be in, I don't like to be in the forefront. I like to be in the background. That's just who I am. But she wants to kind of push me there and to help me feel a little bit more comfortable. So that requires taking risks, putting myself in spaces that I usually wouldn't be, you know?
Okay. But you're talking, first of all, you're talking like an authentic leader. And here's why. What's coming up for me is, you know, the analogy of the wolf pack, right?
Yes,
so the alpha isn't in the front. The alpha is in the back. Right. Because mm-hmm. the alpha is that strongest energy. And so the betas are the ones kind of walking forward. The alpha, though, is there to protect those who need the alpha the most. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's kind of symbolic of authentic leadership, because if leadership is about, look at me, I'm in the front. Look at me, I'm at the top. Look at me, I'm in charge. Then it's actually not leadership. It's more like narcissism, right? I mean, it's more like about your ego and not about true leadership. So I just kind of wanted to validate that I understand like why she comes forward, because, right, I love people who can stand in their leadership, because we're always taught that leadership is flashy or big or in your face, when real leadership, authentic leadership, is actually quite nurturing. You know, it's got an aspect of like, I got to take care of everyone. You know, like if one person falls back, I've lost my entire pack. And so therefore, I'm going to be there with those who need me the most. I'm going to be there for the ones who are a little slower or a little older or a little weaker, who just need that extra strength. Right. And
right.
So I just want to celebrate that with you, that I feel is authentic leadership, and it makes sense why she would come forward.
Oh, thank you. Yes, she's wonderful. And as I said, there's a horrible misrepresentation about her. She's very kind. She's very patient, and she is very fiery. And she also works with me on what I consider to be passion projects or things that are really near and dear to my heart that I support, which again is like women's liberation across the world. So it's something that she also helps me to find my voice in. So, and a lot of that is, you know, it does feel very, I don't know, I guess you could say like monotonous, or it's just day-to-day activity. So it doesn't look maybe the way you would find it portrayed in a movie where there's these it's rituals or dances or whatever. It's like having, you know, honest discussions about how to help move, you know, women forward. How else can I support women in certain spaces, and having those discussions. So that's what the goddess experience is for me. And I realize that it is different for other people. Some people, as you said before about the archetypes, they, you know, they look at the goddess, certain goddesses as archetypes, but for me, they're real deities. They're real spirits that have a voice.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I've learned that. I'm more on the visual side. I have a little clear audience like you, but I get things visually really fast. And I remember right before my life got its ultimate shakeup years ago, this is like 10 years ago now, I felt compelled to paint a picture of the goddess Kali, which I didn't realize was sort of invoking her until she showed up, and she was like, blow this up. You know, like, this doesn't work, lady. We're going to just like revamp it. And I thought, hindsight's 2020, right? So I'm like, oops. Yes. I mean, it was good. I am grateful and I appreciate it. But I realized like, this isn't something, it's so funny how some people can see this as imaginary. And I'm like, whether or not these deities actually existed, and I do believe in some dimensional plane, they do exist. Mm-hmm. Whether or not you believe they physically existed or not, they are an energy that has been believed in for centuries. And so therefore our collective has helped create them, whether they pre-existed or not. We have created them through our thoughts, through our stories, through speaking of them, through thinking of them, through using them to help explain certain aspects of spirit. They exist.
Yes.
And when you invoke one, they will respond to you. Yeah,
they really will.
Even if you don't know you're doing it. So they're, like you said, it's, I don't see that you need to have a ritual. They like that. I know it's very much, ritual, I feel, is more for humans than it is for the other side, right? It's for us to feel like something is uplifted out of the everyday and into another realm. Whereas they're like, when you call, you know, like, yeah. I will be responding to that. So I can definitely attest that this is an energy that when you call it, whether you realize it or not, some part of you is invoking.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And their response.
Yes. It is very, very, very real. And I will say, you know, it's been a privilege to learn this because, again, you know, I had a lot of skepticism and I really didn't believe initially, but now I know it. And there are some that are way more active than others, or make their presence known way more, or can be pushy, or more, wait for you to learn some of these lessons. It really does. Depend, and also just have the faith. That's all I can say is have faith. They're there to help you. It's a very real realm.
Yeah. So, okay. What are some common challenges or misconceptions that people might have when they try to connect with the goddess realm? What are some bigger things that you see where you're like, well, that's not true, or that's in your way?
Oh, that's a good question. Some challenges. Well, I think people have an idea of what the relationship is supposed to look like.
Okay.
And I was uncertain about that at the beginning as well. And I think people sometimes look at the goddesses as a vending machine to get what they want. And
that is the end.
But it's actually really a relationship. I will say that the goddess Artemis looks at you as her companion, but a commitment is required. I think the biggest misconception is just you're going to them to ask for what you want and that is the end. But that's really not what it is. And that is not how it has been with me and any of the goddesses that I've spoken with. I think obviously there's been a horrible misrepresentation of goddesses as a whole, especially according to, you know, the world of Christianity. So people believe that they're equated with Satan or the devil. And that they're evil beings naturally, right? They're tricksters, which is also, from my experience, very untrue. And that they are very knowledgeable, wise, spiritual beings who are really here to help. So I think, you know, there's a lot of fears associated with kind of doing this work and connecting. But challenges to connecting with them. That's a really good question. I think some people have a belief that if you call upon a goddess, you'll get what you want, meaning that the one that you want is going to step forward for you. And that's not always the case. That depending on where you're at in your life, what type of assistance and help that you need, what type of guidance you need, but also who's best aligned with your energy, that's usually who will come forward. It doesn't mean you are rejected. It just means not now.
Yeah. And so do you find that, so one of the principles that I sort of see, one of my biggest sort of spiritual principles I follow is the principle of oneness, right? And some people, when they look at, so kind of going back to what you said, when they look at the goddess realm, they see the pantheon, right? They see many gods versus the one god. And now what's your take on that? I have a take on that, but I'd like to hear yours. Do you believe that there is an ultimate oneness, or that it really is this divided, sort of separated aspects of source?
Oh, that's such a great question. I mean, I think we are all part of the whole. So that's really, I feel like that's the only way I know how to put it, because I know in my mind, there's this one pervading consciousness, this one pervading energy. But at least here on Earth as a human, we're individualized for experience. But being classified as a deity, but as we classify them here on Earth, I mean, that's also an experience unto itself from their perspective. I think that they're part of the whole, the same energy runs through them, but their experience is different. But we are the ones, I believe, that have deified them, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So we categorize them in that way.
Well, I mean, if we look at, and I've never studied the Bible, I know a lot about it just because there's a lot floating in our culture, right? So I can kind of get the gist. But you know, in the Bible there are the realms of angels, right? There's the regular angels, I think, and then there's archangels as well, and yet there's still sort of like the overarching idea of God. And I see it in a similar way, whereas it doesn't matter what aspect of source you're talking to, it's all source, right? So it would be like the ocean would represent source, and every wave represents an individual expression of the ocean. It's still the ocean, but this wave is Athena, and that wave is Archangel Michael, and there's Deanna, and there's Therese, and there, you know, there's my cat, like all of it ultimately being the one. So I feel like we're on the same page. We're sort of talking about the same thing here. And there's just, I think that maybe, and you can tell me your thoughts on this, that we individualized or deitized aspects of source to help us more deeply understand. It's a reflection back to us about some aspect within ourselves, either an aspect that maybe is developed or wanting to be developed, like as a way to sort of understand it and get more deeply in tune with it. And I just love to hear your take. Is that how you see it? Or are you seeing it a little differently?
I mean, yes, I think that's kind of a hard question, I think. You're probably going to have to repeat the question. I'm sorry. I don't know.
That's okay. So let me see if I can articulate it better. So if I'm looking at the energy of the whole, it's all source, but then I'm seeing that there are articulations, and we're calling these articulations goddesses. Right. And these goddesses are bringing forth certain qualities. What do you feel the intention of that is? Why articulate into these different aspects of the divine feminine? Why do you think that would be necessary? Or why do you think humanity connected to that energy?
Well, that is a very hard question, honestly. I mean, I do think that, I mean, we see this phenomena all across the world. So yes, perhaps it is our way of understanding source and different aspects of source. But that's almost asking why, like how we even created religion in a way.
Right. Yeah. No, it is a big question. That is the one. Come on, Deanna, just answer that massive question.
I mean, I do think it is a way to really understand ourselves and the cosmos and to make sense of things as well, and to make sense of the human journey. It's a great question. I mean, again, you see this kind of personified all across the world in certain ways, but perhaps we're all just looking for some sort of cosmic support system.
I think you've articulated it well. I think you nailed it. The feeling I get is, I had a teacher who talked about archetypal energy, you know, in terms of acting when I was an actress way back when. And one of the things he said that I thought was so profound is that each one of us comes here to tell a story where we can be in every story, but there's a particular story that we tell, our life experience tells. And when we align to that as an actor, it makes for really great storytelling. It's very believable because we're, so if I were to get a part that sort of emphasized my personal story, you'd be like, oh my gosh, it's like she was born to play that role, because in a way it was.
Right.
So each one of us has that. And I feel like perhaps what we did was, as humans or as a belief system, and maybe we did it with religion too, and we just keep doing it over and over again, but they do represent archetypal energies that we're trying to learn from. Like, so if we go back to Hera, and maybe you're saying leadership. So she teaches us what feminine leadership looks like, or how to move into a state of feminine leadership. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. Yes.
So I feel like it's another way for us to connect into these archetypes that are meant to sort of teach us how to do, you know, how to be in love, or how to access your inner power, or how to, you know, be wise and fair, or whatever it is that sort of like archetypal energy is connected to with these goddesses. But that's just my take. What I would love to know is, when you're having people work with the goddess realm, what is it you're assisting them doing when it comes to working with goddesses?
First, I'm teaching them how to just connect to that realm.
Okay.
And I know via YouTube, there's a lot of meditations that you can perform, or, you know, you can access to connect. But from the way it's been shown to me, it's a very sacred relationship and a sacred act just to connect and be welcome to that realm, because it does require like commitment and dedication. And I think that's something that I really focus on at the beginning, because I hate for there to be misconceptions about what the work is supposed to look like. But also, I do emphasize a lot of respect towards that realm, especially given the fact that it has been suppressed for a very long time.
Yeah.
Fortunately. So that's one thing that I do focus on. But where we get into kind of like the nitty gritty, it really depends on what it is somebody is working on to heal. And, you know, it isn't as easy as me assigning somebody, you know, a goddess. Obviously, the goddess must come to them. And so their heart really has to be open and available to not just make that commitment and have that dedication, but to do the work. And a lot of the work will come directly from the goddess. They usually bring your attention to something that you need to take time with. But they're there to, you know, support you, but I say that, but support can look in a, you know, a very specific way, depending on which goddess steps forward. But their goal is really to help you heal a lot of aspects about yourself in this life.
Yeah, I can attest to that, that not every goddess that comes forward makes it easier on you in the beginning, but they do heal some, they do get you to see things, and they get you to make a quite a big shift, you know, if you invite their energy in. So Deanna, you also channel, is that correct?
I do. Yes.
Do you channel the goddesses? Is that part of your channeling?
Yes, and I will tell you that channeling is, you know, there's different types of channeling, right? You have a trans channel, which I'm going to say I'm not a trans channel, even though at times maybe it really depends on how long the session is, but I'm usually, I do mental channeling, but I can feel the spirit come close to me. And yes, at the very beginning, I just explored with goddesses, which was a little hairy because again, usually commitment or some form of dedication is required. But I've made it very clear it was for exploratory purposes and for learning. And I've had, you know, the opportunity to connect to quite a few, thank goodness, that they came, because sometimes I'm like, I don't know if they're going to show up.
Right.
they can say no. Exactly. So I'm always like, well, they might, they may or may not. But yes, I've had the opportunity, and I feel like for me, it has been a very unique experience, but a blessing.
And you also teach channeling. Is that correct too? You teach people how to channel?
I do teach people, and I was really reluctant to do that because it can be really, it's really challenging when you do that type of work. It's not, I feel like it's not very straightforward. Even when I was learning, I made so many mistakes. And even now when I practice, sometimes I'm like, I need you to repeat, or is it soft? And your energy usually has to be pretty well aligned with the energy of what it is that you are channeling. And when you're transitioning to another type of energy, a new energy where that door has to open, it's really hard at the beginning. And I had quite a bit of difficulty with the goddess realm at the very beginning, but I also think they were testing my commitment.
That sounds like something they might do. They do like us to commit. Let me ask you, were you able to select whom or who you wanted to channel, or did you find that it was sort of pre-selected for you? Like, because you said you do have to be an alignment, right? With
So at the very beginning, I just let whomever step forward just because I wasn't sure. And Hera and Athena and Artemis were the first three that stepped forward. And Artemis is unsurprising because I feel like I've been connected to her in previous lives, but they came forward first. And it was only after quite a few practice sessions with them that I figured I would try to, you know, see if it was even an option to channel other goddesses. And I feel like so far so good. It's, you know, so far I haven't had any rejections. I'm like, you know, I'm still, there's massive pantheons to explore, but so far it's been working all right.
Okay. That's good to know, because as a channel myself, I haven't tried to ask for specific. I haven't tried to ask for anybody specific, but you know, those who want to come through. And I find that they like to surprise me. They don't always let me know that they're on the way.
Yes.
Kind of like,
one day I was practicing with Artemis, and one of my friends practices with me, and she unexpectedly asked whether or not, you know, like, where are all the male gods? Like, where are the gods? Because we were focusing so much on the goddesses, and Artemis decided to bring somebody unexpectedly, and I could feel them come in, and it was a very like profound energy. But you know, I usually don't say yes because I need to test and know first. It's not a free for all. And she brought someone in, and it was the Greek god Hermes, and he was very funny. He's hilarious. But that was unexpected. But usually I do ask for permission. I always ask for permission. And sometimes, yes, I might light a candle, some incense, or, you know, something devotional out of respect. But I always ask permission, whether, you know, just to make sure that we have the space to talk. And if they want to reject me, that's fine. But I'm very clear with my intent at the beginning. But yes, you can ask. You can ask.
Okay. Is that something that when you're teaching people to channel, is that a part that you get to in the process where you can kind of show them how to connect specifically to something or someone?
But I've deliberately separated the goddesses. I do not include that in a class because it is an entire thing unto itself. With the angels and the archangels and your spirit guides, since that relationship is very different than what you have with deities, yes, I do teach them how to connect to those channels. And one thing to also be mindful of, you know, there are certain channels that you naturally just connect with. And others, you might be on the struggle bus. There are certain ones that even my guide has told me, like, you can try, but, you know, it's probably not going to work for you.
Long shot, right?
You know, yes. So for example, you know, I've tried to, out of pure curiosity only, I've tried to channel like Pleiadians or there's something else. And it's like, I feel them, but it is just not working. And I might get a word, but yeah, it's very hard. So there's just certain things I connect with and certain things that I don't.
So let's talk about your introduction to channeling class, because I know there's some people who might be really interested in learning about this. What are some of the things that people can expect from this class that they can learn? And, you know, will they be proficient at channeling by the end of it?
That's a really good question. When I was creating the class, that was the question I was asking myself, like, how long does it take to become a proficient channel? You know, because some people, they do it, they practice, you know, maybe a week or two and, oh, my hearing is great. And others could be practicing for 6-7 months and they're still having a very hard time. And I acknowledge that. So I'm very clear that it is a lot of time and effort, and you know, the exercises that I have created, you know, there's something to be doing over and over and over and over again. And I know that is very tedious, but it's for a reason. So,
I was just going to say, no, that makes so much sense to me. I often equate it to psychic muscles. Like, you're going to a gym. It's like you can't lift a dumbbell once and get a nice bicep. You have to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And then you build that strength. So I totally get that.
Yes. And one of the first things that I really do focus on is, you know, a lot of cleansing the energy body and the mental body, because that, I think, and your channel, it's very, really important for you to be able to be a clear channel to receive the information, right?
But totally.
Also, I feel like it's important to be able to feel energy. Not everybody can feel it, but we learn some techniques to be able to feel when a spirit comes in, because there are challenges at the beginning of channeling. You might sit there and call on something or invoke something and not, you know, not that you're not hearing anything or nothing's coming, but it doesn't mean the spirit's not there. And I think sometimes when you can feel that spirit, you know, they're there. And I think that gives you a little bit of confidence. It helps you at the beginning of the journey know that, okay, you know, baby steps to get there. But there's a lot of exercises. It's very hefty on that, very structured. But at the beginning, I try to help you understand what type of channeler you are, because there are various types of channelers.
Yes, that's very cool. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
And what do you think one of the biggest benefits of learning to channel is? Especially, I mean, like, you and I do this and we've got, you know, work that we do that's related to it. We've got podcasts that are related to it. So it sort of makes sense, like, how we're using it. But what if you're just wanting to have the ability and it's not something that you're looking at sort of monetizing or anything like that? It's just, I want to be able to be open to channeling. What do you think the biggest benefit of that is?
Well, I think for many of us, depending on the type of lifestyle you have, I do think the one thing that it teaches you more than anything is that you're never alone. I have to say it, you know, a lot of us feel very alone on this life's journey. And being able to connect with or hear spirit reminds you of that, but it also reminds you that you have a support system that is here to help you throughout this very difficult space. So to me, that has always been my biggest takeaway, like especially in your darker moments where you really need that comfort or that guidance or that light, being able to connect in that way, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, that is such a great point. I mean, that is, I feel really blessed that I've been able to be connected for so long, like, and not have any doubts that there's, that we're constantly surrounded by love and support. I think you make such a good point. That really is such a good benefit of opening up your intuitive abilities and honing them and strengthening them so that you know, it, without a doubt, that there absolutely is love and support for you all the time, 24/7.
Yes.
And opening the channel is a great way to experience that and actually get to, like, connect with them. So yeah. I know that you are offering a special to our listeners today to try your introduction to channeling course. Do you want to let us know about that and how we can go join this course?
Sure. So right now I'm offering 20% off. There's a discount code that you can enter to get this percentage off. And it'll be available for the next month.
Awesome.
So that you can take this very lengthy class. It's a very lengthy class. It's several weeks. It's a lot of work. I come from an academic background, so I think of how to utilize every hour of your day, every day, which is a lot, sadly. But it's, you can choose to do one of two things. You can take the class independently, or you can take it alongside me. It's really up to you in terms of what you feel like you need throughout the course. But you know, the overarching goal obviously is by the end of the class, you know, to know, number one, what type of channel you are, but number two, to have had the experience of channeling various types of spirits. I try to provide a very diverse array of spiritual beings for you to practice and connect with. And I think what you will find is there are certain types of spirits that you are way more attuned with than you thought. So that's also my goal.
Fantastic. Well, you'll find that link to the introduction to channeling course in the show notes. So you can click on it there, and there will also be that special discount code. So you can claim your 20% off and go get some psychic gym time. Even people who already are open to channeling, I cannot stress to you how important it is to do your psychic gym time. Yes. That's what I call it. I love doing it because it just, it helps you. It helps you move through it so much faster. So
it does.
It really does. So I love that you've got a course that's heavy in exercises, because I feel like that's just going to be the best way to get in there. Because once you connect, that's easy, but it's strengthening those muscles and being able to hold the energy that's so important. So I love, love, love that you're offering this course.
Yes, it took me a very long time to create this course. I'm going to be honest. It was very painful.
It was a labor of love.
It was a labor of love, and I'm glad I did it. But yes, I hope people are interested and want to learn how to channel.
Awesome. Deanna, where can people find you if they want to follow you for more?
Oh, great. If you want to find me, you can find me on my website, because I actually am on my website quite a bit. So you find me at infinitesupply.org. You can find me on Instagram as well. I do check my DMs occasionally. I know that I'm not a huge social media person, but if you do email me, my email is everywhere. I will respond. I always do as well.
And you've got to check out her Intuitive Awakening podcast. And you can find that, I know you can find it on iTunes. Are you on a bunch of different platforms with that as well?
Yeah, it's on Spotify and iHeart and Amazon.
Yeah. Excellent. So check out the Intuitive Awakening podcast, because she's got some great episodes there. I know she does a lot of different episodes with channeling. So I believe you even have channeled messages coming through on your podcast. So it's a great listen.
Yeah, we've been doing some of that lately.
I love it. Well, Deanna, it's been such a pleasure to have you on here. And thank you so much for sharing with us your experience of the goddess realm and tapping into that energy. And I'm so excited for people to learn what kind of channel they are. So if you're listening to the podcast, you can leave a comment. If you're listening to us on Spotify, you can comment right there, and I can look at the questions and share them if you have them with Deanna. Also, you can reach out on Instagram as well. My handle is at Blythe Starlight Brand, and you can leave comments or DMs there. If you have questions for Deanna, let me know and I will pass them on to her. But until then, Deanna, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I've had a great time. Thank you.
Awesome. And for all those who are listening, sending you lots of love, and I will see you next week.
Thank you for joining me. Be sure to visit me at blythestarlight.com and subscribe to my list. That way you'll never miss an episode of the Modern Mystic Soul podcast, which can also be found on Spotify, iTunes, and all your favorite podcasting platforms. You can also find me on YouTube, Instagram, and Pinterest as Blythe Starlight. Until next time, stay magical.